Welcome to our UFC 258 post-show. I'm John Pollock. If it's past 1 in the morning and we're going live, that means the other person joining me is the Lord of the Cord, Phil Chertok. Hello, Phil.
I'm okay, but it appears like our show's been invaded by somebody. Gina, get out of here. We didn't want you. Why don't you go hang out with Ben Shapiro? Why don't you? God, gee, she's gotten so rude. Don't you?
I didn't know in these past 3 weeks you became a comedian.
Well, you know, you try to lighten up these shows, try to make fun of what you can with it. It's great to be here, John. It's great to be here at 1 o'clock after a great main event.
Right before we started going live, Phil made sure that I was watching the screen, and I said, yes, yes, of course. And then, of course, when we started the show, I went to go reference my notes. So when you welcomed in our unexpected guest, took me a second there to piece it all together here as we had a brief cameo.
That's okay. You know, I had a feeling it might fall flat.
You did warn me.
Yeah, that's okay. That's all right. This isn't a comedy show. We're not here to make jokes. We're here to talk about fights.
We're here to be very, very serious, as always. What was the volume like tonight, Phil? This was not 257, but, you know, a card that, let's be honest, this was not one that I think people were checking their watch every hour to count down until UFC 258. But what was the what was your gauge of the interest tonight?
It wasn't the most energetic audience tonight. It didn't seem like this event had a ton of buzz. For hardcore fans, we were excited to see Kamaru Usman. I mean, he's looked so tremendous, and Gilbert Burns as well. He's looked great earning this title fight tonight. But in terms of just the general interest, it really wasn't that high. Even amongst a lot of the hardcore fans, they just sort of felt lukewarm on this card. I don't know if that's because they've been burned out from maybe the Conor fight, or just it didn't have the compelling matchups of some previous events.
I would say the UFC has put together a lot of big title fights for these first couple of months. But this one, granted, I was very interested in the main event, but this was definitely the show that if you're skipping a UFC pay-per-view, this is the one you're skipping. And was not helped by the fact that this week there was a point where we had, I think, 4 fights on the early prelims. By the end of the week, they were down to 1 on the early prelims, and casualties this week included Jimmy Rivera and Pedro Munhoz. That I think would have been a really exciting fight. Yesterday, they lost Bobby Green and Jim Miller after Bobby Green apparently collapsed backstage after the weigh-ins. And then there was a Jillian Robertson-Miranda Maverick flyweight fight that got pulled today due to a non-COVID-related illness. So this card, of the fights it lost, they were all some notable fights on this card that didn't help matters.
Yeah, definitely exciting fights that would have been good on television as well, that could have maybe hopefully, you know, drawn some interest into the main card. But really, they weren't the types of fights that were going to be, you know, moving the needle here. It was largely centered around the main event. Kamaru, who has been exposed previously with the Colby fight and the Masvidal fight, and Gilbert Burns, who, while being on a great run, is still a bit of an unknown to a lot of the casual audience.
Yes. So we also, let's not forget the biggest star of tonight's broadcast, those 8K cameras, Phil.
I feel like you can take what I said from the last pay-per-view about the 3D graphics and how the UFC just does these things sort of like half-assed and not right. Like, it felt like they watched the Super Bowl, saw a bunch of fancy cameras, and then were like, let's try that. And like, they didn't think about the environment or like overkill. It was too much. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see it again.
Oh, I think we'll definitely see them again. I feel
not
like
at with volume, those, yeah.
I feel with those shots, because they've been using these in WWE as well. And you know, when you're coming down and doing the entrance, like, it kind of works. I did feel it was kind of overdone by the end of tonight's broadcast. Like, they just, it was like, we got a brand new toy and we are going to play it to death. And that was the 8K cameras tonight. But I will say this, I've also been a critic of how the UFC, it's typically a very static production from show to show. And I will say over the last number of years, they have tried to introduce a lot of different elements. So anything that does try to get out of the usual, like if you go back 10 years ago to a UFC card and just watch the production elements of it, it doesn't greatly change year to year. You don't see like these dramatic changes. So when they do experiment with other stuff, I feel like a hypocrite complaining about it. It was just, you know, new technology to play around with. And hopefully it's like when there is a crowd there, maybe it will be more impactful.
I think that's really it. I think once you have a crowd there and you have that long entrance and there's a lot of flashes going off and like, you know, some glitter and all that, I think it could look really awesome. But even then, you still want to use it sparingly. You don't need to use it between yes. every round. And like in some situations, one fighter in the intro would get the fancy camera and then the other person would get the regular camera. So it's like, who are you? What are you saying about these guys?
Imagine the Just Bleed guy in 8K.
I'm imagining it and in 16K.
I'm just letting that image settle in with you. So it was interesting, the promotion for this main event with Kamaru Usman and Gilbert Burns. The backstory, of course, is that the two were training together under Henry Hooft at the Sanford Training Center down in Florida. And then these two were supposed to fight all the way back last July after Burns had beat Tyron Woodley. This was going to be the first pay-per-view on Fight Island. But then Gilbert Burns was out of that card. Then they tried to reschedule it for December. Usman had to pull out of that one. So this was our third go-around. And from the get-go of these two teammates being scheduled to fight one another, Kamaru Usman had uprooted himself and gone to Colorado to train under Trevor Whitman. And then this week, I did hear an interview with Henry Hooft, which is a very good interview on John McCarthy and Josh Thompson's podcast. But Henry Hooft is very much trying to downplay, you know, the UFC is trying to sell this drama and leaving the gym. It really is. There wasn't really this grudge or anything like that. It was just they're fighting for the title and they understood. And I will say from the stare down at the weigh-ins on Friday and everything about this main event, there definitely appeared to be some very legitimate animosity between these two, which I thought was compelling stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like there was some animosity there, but sort of when Kamaru explained it in the post-fight speech that he gave, it just sort of sounded like it was just about, you know, competition. There was never really any specific personal details. I think there was some, you know, it's personal because they trained together so long and certainly leaving the gym and going to a new gym is a big deal. But it never seemed personal in this type of way that we often see these fights.
Not this was hardly John Jones, Rashad Evans, but I would not say this, like if you listen to Henry Hooft, I mean, he made it seem like this is just a simple, you know, this is a business transaction. It's just something simple. I think it was somewhere in the middle there.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. There's no way that two men can go in there and fight each other, and, you know, for, you know, their dreams and it just be a simple business transaction.
So this turned into a really great fight right from the beginning. In the opening round, it's Gilbert Burns landing this huge right hand that stuns Usman, and he is definitely rocked from this shot. And it's Burns following up. He drilled him with this knee to the body right down the middle, and then he threw this head kick, and Burns went to his back where he was going to be very comfortable. And we got several minutes of Muhammad Ali versus Antonio Inoki, where Gilbert Burns was kicking away at the legs of Usman, who was not going into those waters with Gilbert Burns at all. So a big round for Gilbert Burns. The second round, total role reversal, as it's Kamaru Usman landing an overhand right that stuns Burns, and Burns is wobbly. Usman is attacking him, and we got to see Usman's jabs. And one of the key transitions in this round was Usman all of a sudden changing to southpaw and probably confusing Burns a bit because suddenly he's getting jabbed with the right hand. So a big round for Usman after two. The third, Usman drops him with a jab and Burns is down. He's eating these shots. He tries to scramble, but Usman puts his back down onto the canvas and finishes Gilbert Burns with strikes. This was a totally worthy main event, super engaging fight. I thought this was a great fight.
Yeah, it was exciting right from the get-go, like you said. And we saw a new dimension to the champion. I mean, when you hear about somebody going to a new camp so late in their career, it's sort of hard to imagine how much of a difference it can make. But clearly there were large changes that Usman adopted and things he worked on, mainly that jab, which Trevor Whitman, I mean, in between rounds, he said, "You're a champion because you're of your jab. You're a champion because of your jab." Damn right.
Yeah, this was, Kamaru Usman, we did see him vulnerable in that first round. I mean, that was, we haven't seen him, I think, in that much trouble. Like the Colby Covington fight was very competitive for five rounds, but I don't know if it was ever to the point that, I mean, Gilbert Burns looked like he had Usman totally rocked. But to his credit, Usman recovered and then took over from the second round onward. I think the stance switch was very key. And I'm very interested to see what Kamaru Usman's roadmap is like after this fight. Do you look at this as I've only scratched the surface training under someone like Trevor Whitman, or is he going to now go back to Florida? Will it be kind of a combination of the two? I think that part's kind of interesting because I think we got to see that after, you know, he was preparing for a fight in July. So that would have meant, you know, several months prior to that, closing in on a year now that he's probably been working under Trevor Whitman. Does that relationship continue?
Well, the impression that I got from an interview that I heard with him last year was that he's moved out there to Colorado. So that seems like it's a permanent type of thing. So, and I mean, if success is a measure of what you're going to do, you know, stick with what's working. I mean, clearly going to Trevor Whitman's has produced terrific results. Regarding what you said about we haven't really seen him in this position. Yeah, Burns was throwing a lot of heat, whereas Colby never is really a power puncher. He was always throwing with volume, but the way that Burns landed was with a lot of power. And he landed even a few times after the big shot early. But, you know, credit to Kamaru. He stayed composed after being rocked, sat back on that jab, and took the title.
And, you know, sometimes the fighters, the question they hate the most is immediately after a big win, they're asked, what's next? Well, Joe Rogan wasted no time. Like before Gilbert Burns is even off the canvas, Joe's like, who's next? Who's next for Kamaru Usman? And it is a great question because Leon Edwards seems to be the only guy left when you look at wins over Burns, win over Covington, win over Masvidal. I would say Stephen Thompson is a distance away from a title fight. Like these are like Kamaru Usman is not that far from clearing out a lot of these big contenders. You're looking at Leon Edwards, Michael Chiesa, and I think unless Khamzat Chimaev comes back and they just springboard him into that, like that's what we're talking about. Like a 15th ranked guy being in that conversation. Like Usman has pretty much dominated this top 10.
Yeah, he absolutely has dominated. I think that is the most appropriate word for him. It's a word that he uses when he describes his mentality in these fights. He doesn't want to win these fights. He doesn't want to finish these fights. He wants to dominate these fights for five rounds, skunk these guys, shut them out. And he's done that throughout the entire division, and it doesn't look like there is anybody. I mean, there is Leon Roberts, who is he deserves a title shot. He's
Leon
not going to get
Leon
Edwards. I always do that. Sorry,
not the referee.
That's right. And he definitely deserves it. He's not going to get it. He wants to be on that March card. And yeah, they were trying to rush Chimaev into a title fight already, so they can slow the roll on that. I mean, for Usman, though, like he's calling out Masvidal. I don't know if you saw that in his post-fight interview. And it's like I guess if he wants to make the most money, sure. Like, yeah, sure.
That's the logical person. Like, if you are the champion, like, who is going to bring you the most value? Masvidal would be that person. They're talking about trying to put Edwards and Covington together. I don't see that fight being put together on a month's notice. But if they can make that fight at some point, that would obviously produce a contender, whether it be the rematch with Covington or Edwards finally getting his title fight. But for Usman, if you're just looking pure financial interests, Masvidal is the guy, and you at least have that story of Masvidal on a full camp, even though I don't see a rematch going much different than the first.
Oh, I agree. I don't see the rematch going much different, but it was a huge, you know, it was one of the biggest pay-per-views of the year in a huge year. And even if they don't match the numbers of the first one, it still would be a massive success. So, I don't know. I don't know if they'll do it. The UFC, even though sometimes when those money fights are there, the UFC does seem reluctant because there is an element of they don't want to go too far down that path of a guy not deserving it, unless it's like Conor or something, who they'll give a title fight for no reason.
We'll get to that, some news items at the end here. But that was our main event, a solid, solid fight. I would definitely recommend checking out the fight if you missed it. Moving on, anything else to say about the main event before we move on?
I'll say this, you know, up to this point, outside of the Covington fight, Usman has sort of been maybe criticized. I mean, not really criticized, just like, why doesn't he have more appeal? He's a really charming guy, but he doesn't have the most exciting fighting style. This was a very exciting fight. It was a very exciting win, and he's added new weapons to his arsenal. So, it kind of feels like the sky is the limit on this guy. Like, I don't know what the peak is on him. And so it was really exciting. So if you missed it, I think you should go check it out.
Yeah, I think Usman, he's one of those champions that is very much going to depend on the opponent. Style-wise, I think he gets a bad rap because now that we've seen, like, that Covington fight that to me was a fight of the year contender and this fight that was excellent, I really don't think you can be that person that just criticizes him for having, a heavy wrestling style. He has shown that diversification over the last year and a half, that his striking is, I mean, he stayed on his feet the entire fight right up until the end.
Yeah, it did seem like he was, I don't know if concerned was the right word, but he was definitely avoiding even going anywhere near Burns's guard. He was happy to hit him. And he hit him with, there was a shot he hit him with standing, like a punch to the stomach. He hit him with two of them in the first round. And one of them, like, actually forced Gilbert Burns to, like, try to get back up to his feet really quickly. It was interesting. I'd never seen that punch so effective.
Macy Barber made her return. She had been out for the last year after suffering that loss to Roxanne Modafferi. She suffered the knee injury during that fight. Coming back here to fight Alexa Grasso, who came up to flyweight in her last fight. And in this fight, we got to see a very well-rounded game from Alexa Grasso. Early on, she was definitely the calmer of the two and, to me, was landing the cleaner strikes. In the second round, it was Grasso just kind of going in and out and then blasting Barber with a pair of left hands. And Barber eventually landed a kick to the body, took her down, but it was Grasso who got control of her arm and was threatening with submissions, just going from one to the other. So I had Grasso up 2-0. And the third, Macy Barber came alive by just going all out, throwing wildly and connecting with several big strikes. Grasso was just trying to end her momentum by clinching with her, but this was a definite Macy Barber round. 29-28, all judges scoring it for Alexa Grasso. So a loss for Macy Barber, but I guess a silver lining that she had a great third round.
Yeah, she was moving a lot. It was kind of erratic. It sort of reminded me a little Clay Guida-esque. But she was landing with power. I thought the first round was actually kind of close. I was a little bit worried when the results were being read. But ultimately, the right person won. Grasso was really sharp here. But Macy Barber, you know, all is not lost. She did have a good third round, and I think there's still a lot of potential here. I was happy to see a decent quality level here in the flyweight division, because it was, it just seemed like the gap between the top and, the rest of the division was so high. So it's nice to see it get closer to that, you know.
Yeah, he went from being like miles apart to less miles apart.
Kilometers
would be the difference. Like, yeah, maybe that's it. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, there is such a dominant champion on top that even if you want to, and I'm not comparing the two, but like when John Jones was your light heavyweight champion, at least over the last few years, like we have seen John Jones vulnerable, and there have been some razor close decisions that he has left that fight with. And with Valentina Shevchenko, yes, she had more trouble with Jennifer Maia than maybe we anticipated, but my God, I would say Alexa Grasso, sure. Macy Barber, far from ready for Valentina Shevchenko. And I would argue that no one should ever want to have a knee injury, especially one that takes you out for a year. But if you imagine Macy Barber, and I think we talked about it that night, had she beat Roxanne Modafferi, I think she would have been on the fast track to fight Valentina Shevchenko, because they are so in need of challenges at this division with any kind of story attached to it. And this idea of Macy Barber becoming the youngest champion in UFC history, I could have seen her leapfrogging several other contenders at 125 pounds. And I do not see her ready for a title fight. I think that could do a lot of harm for her growth to be thrown to the wolves like Valentina Shevchenko today.
Yeah, I agree with that. She wasn't ready for Valentina then. She's not ready for her now. And she has there's a lot of holes in her game still. She is very young. Let's just slow the roll on her. I mean, she lost this fight. She's barely in the top 10. I don't know if she'll even be in the top 10 after this. But she's a prospect. She's a work in progress. And sort of the same thing with Grasso. When Grasso came into the UFC, there was a lot of hype behind her, right? And she faltered. And, you know, she's coming around again. So, you know, there's a lot of hope for Barber, but we have a lot of time. We can be patient.
Kelvin Gastelum, who has been winless since 2018, but in that stretch, he has lost to Israel Adesanya, Darren Till, and Jack Hermanson, where he was just caught with a submission last July. So his last win was all the way in 2018 against Jacare. He's taking on Ian Heinisch. And Kelvin Gastelum, the story of this fight was him utilizing a lot of takedowns, closing the distance with Heinisch. And I think with Heinisch relying a lot on his power and had clearly drilled these takedowns that he was ready to go for a Kimura every time, but just not really having the right leverage to pull off any of these Kimuras. At one point, he had a Kimura while Gastelum had mounted him.
Yeah, it was a bit unusual, that position, because you'd think like, okay, you're not going to get the submission. At least use that to escape, shrimp out. But no, I guess he thought maybe he could finish it.
It was a first two rounds, very clear rounds for Gastelum. The third was Heinisch's best round. I still scored it for Gastelum, but we did see Heinisch in this round able to reverse and take Gastelum's back. He got his hooks in, but eventually lost it. And Gastelum ended up going 6-for-14 on his takedowns, which doubles his previous high of takedowns in a fight, which he scored 3 when he beat Uriah Hall for in the tough final back in 2013. So Kelvin Gastelum got the win, scores of 30-27, 29-28 twice. I had it 30-27. I thought overall, like not a fight of the night or anything like that, but I think an important performance for Gastelum just to get a win and showcase many areas of his game, in particular his wrestling that he noted he has been doing a lot under Beneil Dariush.
Yeah, I mean, he was working on his wrestling and he was mixing things up. And as the commentators alluded to, he fought a very experienced fight. He used all those, you know, those last few years of losing to the best of the best to his advantage. Whereas Ian Heinisch, he was very game. He was competitive. He was in it throughout, but he was wild and didn't have the finesse that Gastelum had.
And a huge back, as observed by Daniel Cormier.
Massive. Massive back. Him and Bilal Muhammad.
Ricky Simone versus Brian Kelleher. So they tried to put this fight together multiple times, and these are two bantamweights, and they decided, let's do it here at featherweight, because Simone had just fought on January 20th, so he turned around to fight 3.5 weeks later, but was not going to be making it back down to 135. So instead, both fought at featherweight and probably felt a hell of a lot better this week than a typical week, cutting down to 135 or 136. And Ricky Simone looked great in this fight. He was able to get Kelleher down multiple times. He busted him open early in the fight where all the theories were being displayed in real time. John Anik thought this might have been a pre-existing cut, and then all of a sudden Simone squeezed and the cut exploded, but it was turned out it was an elbow from the guard, and Kelleher was dealing with this throughout the fight. Kelleher's only bit of offense was several front kicks that he landed in the second, but this was largely Simone getting takedowns and then tons of pressure. He would not let Brian Kelleher breathe at any point here, and it was three rounds to none for Ricky Simone, and Joe Rogan said this should be an easy win for him, providing these judges are sane.
It's always, you know, a toss-up.
Simone has also gotten rid of his mullet. That was noted here.
That's disappointing.
He said it might come back at the end of this. Okay. So this was going to be one of the fights on the early prelims, but it got bumped up to the pay-per-view card at the end. So this was taking the spot of Jim Miller and Bobby Green. Maki Pitolo and Julian Marquez. This was a very exciting fight. Maki Pitolo is 1-3 in the UFC coming into this one, but he was coming off of two losses, both taking place in August of last year.
Okay, great.
A lot of fights in a month, Phil. It's very impressive. Julian Marquez.
We just had Ricky Simone just had two fights in a month. So, I mean, well, it's old hat at this point.
Julian Marquez, he appeared on Dana White's Contender Series in 2017 and then had two fights in the UFC, has not fought since July of 2018. They were mentioning among his injuries, he tore his lat, which is never fun. Have you ever done that, Phil? In jiu-jitsu, have you ever torn your lat?
No, I've never torn my lat. I did have some really bad persistent neck injuries for years that would be like a spasm beneath the lat, and it was brutally painful, but it wasn't torn. I could get it treated with massage.
What did you do to treat that?
Yeah, just usually it would be massage therapy, but over the long term, I realized it was related to like my work and my posture, so I just sort of worked on that and stress. So.
Oh, okay. How did you correct your posture? I'm very curious.
So honestly, my posture is not great. It's more about just the habit of getting up and walking around and just making sure that I stay active and not just like constantly crouched over, hunched over type thing.
Well, on that note, Maki Pitolo and Julian Marquez, there was a lot of posture use here because they did stand for quite a bit of time here. But I tried. Maki Pitolo was able to go to the body early and then get the takedown. He was showing a lot of good wrestling in this fight as well. I had him winning the first two rounds. And then in the third, man, Julian Marquez was given the ultimate speech by James Krause in the corner. Pretty much, you go out there and you fucking stop this fight. Because you're down, you better end this. And it was like he put the fear of God in Julian Marquez, who came into this round and, dude, this guy was just headhunting. And he starts landing on Pitolo. Pitolo gets him down, and he has a choke, but he loses it. And then Marquez drills him lands a knee, and then catches him with a darce and submits Maki Patolo with 43 seconds left in the fight. Patolo was well on his way to a decision victory here. So a huge come-from-behind win for Julian Marquez, who proceeded to cut the longest interview trying to promote this new hashtag he came up with called UFC Loud to find out the loudest city out there, and then asked Miley Cyrus to be his Valentine. So this guy came prepared with like speeches, requests, and got the victory.
Well, he got the victory. I mean, it was a very eventful fight. I mean, it was action-packed. I suspect this will be the fight of the night. The speech between rounds was tremendous. I believe the exact quote was, "Hit him fucking hard and hit him hard as fuck."
Very technical.
And now there was a moment in the third round when Marquez is like throwing and he just like punches him right in the nuts. And the action doesn't stop. And, you know, Patolo keeps going, but I'm pretty sure it took a fair bit of wind out of him. Anyway, the round kept going on. It was an amazing round, amazing fight. The promo was weird. I mean, it was really weird.
It was made more funny because afterwards Joe Rogan was like openly questioning if he had some like side deal to try and push this hashtag, which was funny because it was a UFC hashtag.
It was a UFC hashtag?
No, well, like he made this up, but it was hashtag UFC Loud. So it's like there's not some like outside company. Anyway, it was just silly. But I think it was just Julian Marquez trying to came up with some wacky idea. And hey, sure.
You know what, though? I'll say this. He had a lot of energy and a good presence in the interview. If the content was a little better, it could have been a really, like, I don't want to say star-making, but it would have been a really good opportunity for him. So I want to see this guy do a little bit better promo next time because I think he can.
I will say, on a roster that has 600 fighters, if you watch this card from this guy singing along to Miley Cyrus as he walked to the cage, the performance, this come from behind win, and then this wacky speech afterwards, I will say you will remember who Julian Marquez is the next time he fights, which should be your goal if you are one of 600 fighters on the roster trying to carve out a bit of identity for yourself.
They can't all be remember the name. It can't be Bilal remember the name Muhammad and Julian remember the name Marquez and Kamaru put some respect on this name Usman. Like we need some variety around this name.
Well, Julian Marquez has an awesome nickname. He's the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Which Brandon from New Jersey was quick to adjust to the Cuban midlife crisis, which I don't know, maybe he's just projecting.
Let's go. That might be the best fight of the night, but I will say my favorite fight of the night was our featured prelim between Rodolfo Vieira and Anthony Hernandez. Vieira, 2-0 in the UFC, last competed in March of last year. He was a -490 favorite. This guy, a 4-time BJJ world champion, 7-time World Cup champion, Abu Dhabi champion. I mean, this guy is like the elite of the elite when it comes to grapplers that have transitioned to MMA.
And one of those world championships was an absolute world championship. So that's like a weight class division. And then the Abu Dhabi, if people aren't familiar, that's a no-gi grappling competition. So like the level of this guy, as you just said, the highest of the highest when it comes to jiu-jitsu.
I love when you get like the cream of the crop of grapplers coming into MMA because you don't know what's going to happen, but I just love the idea of this because immediately Vieira takes him down and you're just basically counting down to doom for Anthony Hernandez. He finds himself mounted and this is like, it's like watching a shark play around with a fish. That's what's happening here. But then all of a sudden, Hernandez escapes from this rolling armbar attempt. He gets slammed back down to the canvas and then suddenly gets back to his feet and he rocks Vieira with this giant shot. And Hernandez is the one going for submissions, and he rocked Vieira multiple times. This dude got his head flung back like the head on a Pez dispenser. He was just getting lit up by Hernandez. I went 10-8 on this round, and it started where it was looking like Hernandez was not going to get out of the first 60 seconds. This was an unbelievable round.
It was an unbelievable round. I was debating if I was going to go 10-8 on it. I did not go 10-8, but I did give it to Hernandez, of course, because it looked like he was on verge of finishing the fight. But there was enough from Vieira early on. But yeah, the fight completely switched. Hernandez looked in so much trouble. And now all of a sudden, Vieira was gasping for air.
Yes, Vieira, I think, wearing the impact of these shots and looked, just spent in the second round. He gets onto Hernandez's back, but he's too high and gets shaken off. And Hernandez just follows with this brutal head kick, drills him with these elbow shots, and then locked on a guillotine. And Anthony Hernandez submits Adolfo Vieira, which, for those curious, Hernandez winning by submission plus 3,000. You could have bet $100 and won $3,000 if you had picked this outcome. This was unbelievable. A minute 53 of the second round. Anthony Hernandez. This will be, look, great main event. Julian Marquez, big come from behind win. But Anthony Hernandez is the guy I will remember years from now with this fight. This was so fantastic.
It was a really fantastic fight. It was a lot of fun. I mean, as a jiu-jitsu practitioner myself, I want to see Vieira achieve the same level of success in MMA that he did in jiu-jitsu. But all credit to Hernandez. What a comeback. What a fight. Stayed in it the whole time. I mean, and you could even sense, like, when he was in bad positions, you know, he was prepared for that and stayed poised and was calm as a cucumber and gave a little cool post-fight speech himself. Definitely a memorable performance. And I don't know where you go from here with Vieira, because I don't know how you correct that. That was pretty brutal.
This was a very rough loss for him. I mean, I'm sure he gets another fight in the UFC for sure. But this certainly, I mean, it's, you are adapting to a completely different sport when you're introducing striking as part of it. My question to you, Phil, is that I don't know what belt Hernandez would be ranked at, but what do you do after a win like this? Like, is this just, do you just leapfrog? Like, what kind of progression like is this? Like, once you have this on your resume,
that's
a great itself, doesn't it?
You know, that's a great question. That's a really great question. And I'll try not to muse too long on this. When I started jiu-jitsu, what I liked about it was I liked the informality of it. I liked the idea that it's like, oh, you're a blue belt because you're tapping the white belts. You're a purple belt because you're tapping the blue belts. And so theoretically, somebody could come in quickly, get promoted quickly because they're doing well. But then I realized something down the line, training for years and years. You know, there's some people, they're never going to do that. You know, somebody might start at 60 years old, And they're never going to beat these guys, but they still should deserve a process to try to get their black belt if they're committed. So, I'm not as in favor anymore about promoting guys after wins, but, if there ever was a case, this would be the one. This would be the one, because this is a world champion. You went in there. I mean, you know, to go back in the, like, jiu-jitsu and MMA history, you know, Vale Tudo, you just did a Vale Tudo fight and you won against the best in the world, really, at one point at this. So hats off to him and, you know, give him any belts. Sure.
For my money, the star of the show was Anthony Hernandez. Your star of the show, Bilal Muhammad, remember the name, versus Diego Lima, who, yes, right away, Joe Rogan referred to Douglas and then corrected himself. The other Lima brother.
I mean, I've been worried.
So, Diego.
I'm just notorious for mispronouncing names, so that's all I'm worried about. I'm like, Diego, not Douglas, Diego.
Well, Diego had not fought since October of 2019. During that time, he had neck and hand surgery. So making the return here. And Muhammad is attacking him with straight lefts. And this was a fight where Bilal Muhammad was not going to let up at all with his strikes. And he was very economical as well. Like he would go to the head. He would go to the body. He was pressing Lima up against the fence and just taking away a lot of available options for Diego Lima. In the first round, Muhammad outstruck him 47-18. And then in the second, Lima's trying to fire off leg kicks, but it's still Muhammad just pressing on top of him. And Lima really is not able to offset any of this, even with the leg kicks. Into the third, it's more nonstop striking. Muhammad mixed in some elbows, some high kicks, and then got a takedown with a minute left. Like, we just saw the full gamut here from Bilal Muhammad. He won 30-27 on all three judges' scorecards, and he has now won 8 of his last 9 fights. So a welterweight that does not get enough spotlight, but someone that is, I think also that comes down to the guys that he has fought. When you look at his last 3 going into this, Curtis Melender, Takashi Sato, and Lyman Good. This a win over Diego Lima. I think next he has to be looking at the, you know, top 12, top 10 guys.
So he did just call out number 12, which is the guy who just knocked
Li out Jingliang.
That's right. And I think that's an okay fight. You're right. He's on a great streak. He's sort of like Kamaru Usman a few years ago. Nobody wants to fight this guy. He's a tough fight for everybody, and he's not a big name. And I think the biggest detriment to him is he hasn't been putting on super exciting fights, win or lose, and losing is not too often. So I think that's been the toughest part. He hasn't gotten finishes. If he can get a finish, maybe he can get some momentum going, but definitely one of the toughest guys in the division, somebody who doesn't get the respect he deserves. And yeah, we should remember the name Bilal Muhammad along with
Bilal Muhammad, Nate Diaz. That's the fight to make.
Well, I mean, I don't think Nate's going to take that fight.
Did you, I loved how they threw in, Nate's name, the idea of Nate taking a fight with Leon Edwards on 4 weeks' notice on a fight night card.
Well, you know, I was kind of surprised that Nate sort of took the bait. I mean, he didn't really take the bait on it, but he played it. Like, normally he wouldn't respond to something like that, but he posted a little meme of it. You know, like, who the F is that, right? As if, like, but maybe to play it up. But, yeah, I mean, really, who was pitching it? That was Edwards who was pitching it, right?
Yeah, just you know, you gotta be realistic with your call. Like Bilal Muhammad. I mean, not the most appealing call out in Li Jingliang, but is he gonna get that fight? I would say probably.
Yes, yes. So
you gotta weigh probability versus you know, your ultimate want here. Pollyanna Viana versus Mallory Martin. This was a fight at strawweight in the women's strawweight division. Viana went for a triangle. Then from there was going for the arm bar. She's landing elbows off her back. Martin tried to slam her off. But this is always like the pro wrestling escape from a triangle. You just lift them and slam them. Unfortunately, in most fights, this is how it ends, is that you slam them down and then it just locks in deeper. And that was the case here with Viana, who now fully had the triangle on and then moved to a straight armbar. To her credit, Mallory Martin was extremely resourceful here and fought through a lot. But in the end, she had the tap at 3:18 of the first round. And Viana had just moved. She had moved to strawweight 2 fights ago. So this is her second win in the division.
Well, it was a very dominant win, super impressive, you know, jiu-jitsu performance from start to end, which wasn't very long. She did have trouble finishing this triangle that she secured. And the reason why, and I was surprised that it wasn't mentioned on the broadcast, is because on the side where the leg goes over top of the ankle, you'll see that connection point. You want the heel of your foot, the bottom foot, to be in front of the other person's shoulder. not behind their shoulder, because when it's in front of their shoulder, you can dip down and make it tighter. And so she was never able to get to that point. And that's why she wasn't able to close the gap there. But a master at her craft, she found another opening. She found the armbar and got the finish. Tremendous.
And the televised portion opened with Andre Yule versus Chris Gutierrez. They went three rounds here. I had them splitting the first two. And in the third round, it was Gutierrez just attacking Yule with his right hand and just piling on strikes. But the main weapon was his leg kicks. And it seemed that Yule had a target on his legs. And just, dude, Gutierrez, it was like batting practice on these legs. Like, he was just swinging wildly. Yule's leg was just out there. He might as well put in a hit me sign right next to his legs. They just got chopped away for 5 minutes in this last round. I thought this was a 10-8 round. I had Gutierrez winning 29-27. The scores were 30-26, 29-27, 29-28 for our 140-pound catchweight fight.
Yeah, I had it 29-28 for Gutierrez. I thought he looked really good. I mean, Yule was looking okay in the first round. But yeah, Gutierrez, once he was able to find that leg kick, he was having trouble with the range in the first round. But once he was able to find it, he was able to take over and then had a really impressive third round. Almost ended it, but Yule was able to hang in there. And Gutierrez got a really good win. I'm excited to see more of him. I was pretty impressed with how he looked in there.
And the main event, Gabriel Green defeated Philip Rowe by unanimous decision on the early prelims, our lone early prelim fight. I will admit I missed this fight.
You know, it was a pretty good fight. Has been the case lately. You know, their openers have been fairly good. You know, it was the early prelim.
That it was. So that was UFC 258. Next weekend, it's Curtis Blaydes against Derek Lewis. After that, we've got Jairzinho Rozenstruik versus Ciryl Gane on February 27th. And the next time, Phil, you and I will reunite is in 3 weeks' time for UFC 259, three title fights. Are you yay or nay on the three title fight cards?
Nay. First of all, I mean, selfishly, it's just exhausting. It's a lot of these fight nights going long and covering it. I mean, it's a lot of fun, but we're working and it's, I just, less 5-round fights, I would prefer. And also,
and if you were to tell me that what are the odds of these three fights going the distance? Because I can see, I don't think we're going to get that. I do not see Jan and Sterling going the distance. I hope Nunez and Megan Anderson does not go the distance, because I think if it does, it will not be a very good fight. Blachowicz and Adesanya, I would say it's probably unlikely any of these three go the distance, to be quite honest, which pretty much assures us that all three will go the distance, that I have officially jinxed this.
My biggest, I think there's also the issue of, like, when you have all those champions on a card, who are you focusing on? Who are you showcasing? It sort of feels like we're at a point where Izzy should be the star of the show. You know, it's
tonight's card could have used like Jan and Sterling, like double up this one.
It was supposed to be. That was supposed to be on this card originally, but it had to get moved because of an injury.
Oh, this one got moved.
Yeah. So you know, they can't all. You know, I they're working around their schedule. I'm not going to complain. They're great fights, but in terms of promoting a star, it's like somebody could get lost. You know, if Sterling wins and is a new champion, but Izzy has some amazing performance, that could get buried behind that. So that's the only drawback that I see, an additional drawback, not the only one, sorry.
I'm looking forward to the photo op, which is really what this card should have. They should have gone back to the naming conventions, because we've got both men's champions here. We have the combination of Piotr Jan Blachowicz.
Tag team match.
Could be. Also, dude, buried under this card We've got on the prelims. This isn't even on the pay-per-view. Dominic Cruz is back to fight Casey Kenney.
Yes.
Joseph Benavidez is fighting Askar Askarov, which is going to be, I think, a tough fight for Benavidez. We will get a look at where Benavidez is now, totally out of the title picture. And Islam Makhachev is fighting Drew Dober. That is on the pay-per-view card. So, of course, Islam Makhachev, I mean, that has been the lightweight that has kind of been anointed as Khabib Nurmagomedov's successor in the weight class.
Yeah, and he didn't really get any action last year. I don't know if he had a single fight in 2020. So I suspect we're going to see him a few times in 2021. This is going to be a year where he makes a push to get into that title discussion.
All right.
We've got some
we want to take some phone calls.
Yeah. So actually right now on the line, our first person is John Fury 316. John, what's the bottom line on UFC 258?
You know, I thought it was a good card considering it's sandwiched in between a Conor main event and a three title fight next 3 weeks from now. I love the main event. I thought Gilbert had Kamar in the first round when he dropped him. I thought if he maybe put a little bit more pressure, he might have been able to finish him. But overall, I thought it was a good card. Kamar Usman, I think, is just so dominant. I just hope we get Kamar and Jorge Masvidal rematch. That'd be, I don't know, what do you guys think?
I mean, that's, I didn't hear the interview after, but Phil was saying like that was the name that Usman was throwing out there. I can certainly see it. Like if you're looking at what is the biggest fight at welterweight we can promote. I mean, the fact is of the available options, a rematch with Covington, a rematch with Masvidal or Leon Edwards. I mean, Leon Edwards would be the most deserving on that list, but he would also be a third place of those in terms of, I think, like maximum eyeballs that you're going to get onto that fight. And Masvidal would be the clear front runner there. So I could certainly see that logic and the story that they pushed that Masvidal had to take that fight on a week's notice. And this time he'll have a whole camp to prepare for Usman.
Yeah, because I think a full camp with Masvidal, that's a dangerous fight for Kamar if he has to fight that. And
I mean, there's certainly we saw a high-level striker. I mean, that is something to deal with for Usman. I'm still heavily favoring Usman in that rematch, but I certainly think like it's an interesting fight. But I feel that that's it's certainly an option and one that I can see a lot of reason to do.
And like, I know they're talking about Usman as like one of the greatest welterweights of all time, but I think it's time we start talking about him as the pound-for-pound greatest in the top five of all time. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Top five of all time.
Like, no, I think he means top five right now, pound-for-pound.
I mean all time. Like
really?
Yeah, he said all time.
18-1, he's got four. He's pretty much dominated the division. He's going to, at this point, he's at the point where he's going to start doing rematches with guys. I think you can make a conversation that he's in the top five all time pound for pound list, like at least fifth.
You know what, John?
I mean, he's had some impressive victories. I think certainly there's certainly been like domination when it comes to like rounds won. I think that is certainly a feather in his cap. That when you go back and look at how many rounds he has also fought, given how many decisions he has had, it would be an astronomical number when you look at rounds fought versus rounds won. I'd have to give it some thought about all time. He's approaching that level. I think that's certainly an argument to make where his placement would be. You'd have to really examine all the candidates.
One more thing. What's April looking for UFC? I haven't heard anything about a main event. Could you see a Conor Poirier the trilogy for that fight?
Not that early. I don't see April happening for that. I mean, they're targeting the summer, which I mean, we'll see if that is ultimately the fight that is made. I think that's clearly the direction that the UFC wants to go in. And Phil, I want to bring this up to you that this was a talking point this week from Dana White was the idea of Conor and Dustin, but it would not be for the title.
Can I play off that for a second? Why is you know, Khabib has said he does not want to hold up the division. And it seems like Dana is the one holding up the division. You guys have any theories about why that's like he's just not willing to strip the title? I mean, at this point, from all I've heard, is Khabib is done with fighting. And yet, for some reason...
Yes, you have heard that from Khabib. This is who you've heard it from. The man who said, I am done. So yes, it is Dana White holding up the division because I think he believes that ultimately he will be able to convince Khabib to do one more fight, which he feels is the biggest fight that he can make. It's having Khabib as one half of it. So I think that is the thought process, but it is at the risk of keeping this division on hold, which is ultimately, can they get away with it? For the most part, they can. But I think in the case of Conor and Dustin, those are the two that I have a hard time imagining these guys are going to be willing to fight without a championship at stake, especially for a Dustin Poirier. I don't know how you sell that fight to Dustin unless you make such an offer that the financial reward for such a fight offsets the fact that we aren't fighting for a title, which the idea of putting this title on ice, I don't know, it's kind of perplexing.
Well, Dana did sort of allude to something that they don't normally do, is that he said, you know, Oliveira should fight Gaethje, I think he said, or Chandler. Gaethje's out of the equation, apparently. So Oliveira should fight Chandler, and then Conor should fight Poirier. And he almost alluded to like a mini tournament, which is something that the UFC never does. That would be actually kind of cool.
But didn't Olivia, or sorry, I butchered that name, turn down two fights already? And that's like a no-no in UFC when you turn down two fights?
You know what? Dana was asked about that, and he gave the most un-Dana answer ever. He said, I totally understand why he wouldn't want to take a short notice fight. He said he wanted a full camp, and that makes perfect sense. So I don't know if Dana was inhabited by somebody else or something, but it seems like they're okay with him at least taking a bit of a break. All right.
Thanks for the call, John.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you. All right. So next up, we have Jason Hagholm. Jason, let me unmute you. You are live.
Hey, what's going on, guys? One sec. Let me plug my headset. Yeah. Well, you know, I thought this was a interesting show. Like, I thought the main event once again delivered. Usman's on the verge of like a GSP level right now. I still wouldn't go in the greatest of all time. I think he needs a couple more wins, but he is putting on the level of talent up there where he can get in that running, but he's on the verge of like a Hall of Fame level career. But all in all, I mean, I thought this pay-per-view was okay. I mean, a good win for Calvin Gastelum, and nice to see, you know, some emotion, especially after the, you know, 3-year hiatus from getting a win. Ricky Simone looked good. Julian Marquez win was really impressive considering he was on the verge of that decision loss. And then, you know, that's going to do a good bump for his podcast with Kendra Lust. But what a bizarre promo. I don't know. I guess just going, you know, obviously you guys were doing this.
Hold on. Wait, did you just say Julian does a podcast with Kendra Lust?
Yeah, they host a podcast together. They are quite good friends, and it's a pretty popular podcast. It does get a lot of traction.
How does that not get mentioned on air?
Because Julian's out there marketing hashtag Kansas City and Arrowhead Stadium and all these things, those weird hashtags. But a very Ultimate Warrior-like promo from one Julian Marquez. But I was going to just say, you know, there's a thing I guess I should ask the both of you, as Cub Swanson put out a tweet yesterday that members of the media should have at least 3 fights. And there's been some, you know, intelligent conversation, especially from Cub and Mike Hack of MMA Fighting. But as you guys were doing the show, Dana subtweeted the tweet, "I stand with Cub Swanson." So what are your thoughts on that? And yeah, all in all, and I guess if anyone's interested, no one apparently streamed tonight. Dana was going for another guy, but no streaming from him.
All right. Thanks for the questions, Jason. Do you want to answer that, John, first?
I don't really have too much thought to it. I think it I think it ultimately would depend on kind of what is your role in kind of the media function. Like I don't believe in the idea that someone has to be a fighter or have to go through numerous fights to be a reporter. I think that you can have a level of, it depends on what your job is. I would say, like, if you were an analyst, I think it would be of great benefit. I mean, I trained for a long time and I found it to be a great benefit to be able to do it and apply just learning hands-on with it. I had no aspirations of being a fighter, nor did I feel it was necessarily a requisite for the job, but I just thought it was a great tool to have as well. And if that's kind of where I stand on it, but I've never had the belief that, you know, you have to be of a certain level that somehow translates to a media role. Like, that's you're not opening a training academy. You know what I mean? It's I don't know. I've always seen it as very distinct, but I can understand where there is a value to it. I would never shy someone away from doing it, that it is going to give you a certain perspective as well. Actually doing it and training, it's certainly not going to hurt.
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it really well. I don't have any disagreement with anything you said. I think it's a kind of a bit of a ridiculous notion. I'm glad to hear that the discussion around it is positive, or at least civil. But like, you can be a critic of a lot of things, and you don't have to be an actual practitioner in those things. I do think it would be useful to have, learn a little bit of all of the disciplines, to go to a referee instructional. There's a ton of things that members of the media could do to improve their coverage, but I don't think learning how to fight is a prerequisite. It might help them, you know, be a little bit more respectful. I think sometimes people in the media are disrespectful to fighters. The treat fighting is not the same as other sports. And when somebody gets knocked out, and it's not the same as losing a basketball game. So that I can understand is frustrating to a lot of fighters, but I don't think that means that you know, journalists need to start going to, you know, MMA classes.
But is it necessarily the journalists that are, and I'm sure there's exceptions, but when you're talking about like mocking fighters that have been knocked out, is that something that is really prevalent among journalists or fans?
Well, maybe that's not the right, but you know, there's pundits, you know, they think about somebody like a Stephen A. Smith type character, right? Who's just like this television pundit who's out there, you know, making proclamations, you know, what he said about Donald Cerrone, right? Like he really, like how Donald Cerrone, whatever, quit in there, like, I think that there is there's a disrespect that even some of the most high level media members, they don't afford fighters the level of respect they deserve sometimes. But again, I don't think that that's necessarily going to be even corrected with some martial arts training. Yeah. All right. So I think we have one more call. And what would it be without a trip to New Jersey? Brandon, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How about you guys?
Great.
Congratulations. We're first win in 3 years.
Thank you. Thank you. I just want to thank my sponsor.
No, you gotta pay the sponsor tax if you're gonna thank them.
That's right. Remember circling the Adolfo Vieira and Fluffy Hernandez. Remember when Couture submitted Tony and they threw a black belt at him after the fight? Shouldn't Fluff's corner have done that for him? It could have been from Target or Best Buy or something like that. Just throw a random black belt, give it to the guy, right?
Randy should have got his golden gloves after the Tony fight.
That's right.
But I mean I don't want to call that fight a fluke, but I mean, especially with the submission, and you're submitting like a 19-time like champion in jiu-jitsu. But
submission wasn't a like, oh, he caught him with some creative thing. The guy was like half dead in there. So
right.
from his strikes.
He earned the win. I'm not trying to diminish the win. I'm just like, he didn't out jujitsu him, you know. That's not what happened.
I mean, you get the lactic acid monster caught up to Dolph the air, right?
That's right.
I mean, what do you, Bilal Muhammad, I mentioned this in the Discord, but I would love to see him fight Chimaev. Like, battle of the prospects, test each other. What do you think about that?
I think right now the immediate concern is how significant these issues are that Chimaev is dealing with, to the point that, I mean, he's still, for those that did not hear about it, like, the reason his fight with Leon Edwards is off is lingering effects from COVID that, I mean, he had months ago. So that's, sounds like it's hit him significantly. I mean, he hasn't offered specifics about what exactly has impacted him, but that's slightly concerning as well. It's certainly, you know, hurt his momentum, but in theory, if he's healthy, I think the fact that they have already targeted him for a fight with Leon Edwards, I see them positioning him a lot higher than Bilal Muhammad. Like, it seems like they want to get Chimaev right into the mix, because they're probably looking at their contenders that, like, the idea of Chimaev winning against a Leon Edwards, I think he'd be the next in line at that point. So it comes down to what welterweights are available. But, you know, if he's on the sidelines for a while, and then it's, you know, this kind of buzz has worn off, then he may find himself fighting someone a lot lower ranked than a Leon Edwards.
Cabe, when he was partying with Kadyrov in Chechnya when he had with COVID, beat out of the bay. One more thing, Curtis Blades, he's already got a takedown already, and the fight hasn't started yet. And what do you think of the Bellator light heavyweight tournament coming up, especially my man Dov Yagamishirov, underdog in the tournament? What are your thoughts on that? I'm very nostalgic about Bellator. It reminds me of the Strikeforce days on Showtime. It's got a big fight feel to it. I'm pretty excited about it. What do you guys think about that?
Not here. Well, as a fellow Canadian, Brandon, we you can't watch it yet. As of now, there's no Canadian broadcaster for Bellator.
You're right.
So
it's geo-block, so we got to get VPN. Dana and Scott Coker won't bust us.
Yeah, maybe Bellator will strike a deal with the Discord.
All right,
Phil is your host.
Thanks for the call, Brandon. We'll answer as I put you on mute. So, yeah, what's your thoughts on the Bellator tournament? And then I actually do want to give my thoughts on this as well.
Yeah, I think that this whole deal is a massive upgrade for Bellator. I think they had so fallen out of, like, we're kind of in this bubble, so we're paying attention to Bellator and following it. But I just think on a larger scale, like, Bellator had completely fallen off the radar from even during the Paramount Network days, which were not all that long ago. CBS Sports Network, I don't think, like, we weren't even getting ratings for that. And just this move to Showtime, it just seems like it was a lifeline for them. I guess the bigger question is what the details of this deal are financially for Bellator, because, you know, the DAZN deal was such a giant one for them, and it looks like that is now a thing of the past. But I love the Grand Prix. I think that some of the signings they made, I think that it made perfect sense to go with your 205 pounders for this particular Grand Prix. And you've got, I think a lot of interesting names, and I think a fairly intriguing fight in Yoel Romero and Anthony Johnson that I'm curious to see how much buzz they can grow for that fight by the time they fight in April.
Yeah. So for the last 2 years, I've been like really shitting on Bellator really hard for having no direction, no ability to promote their events, and just being completely just like, I don't know, in limbo. And it seemed like it was going to continue with this switch to whatever this new network was, that thankfully isn't going to happen. And so I was glad to see that Bellator has a plan for the year, and they're going to be on Showtime, a partner in combat sports. People who know something about combat sports
Does that mean we're going to see Mauro Ranallo return? Are we going to improve the broadcast team? I'm excited for that. I think the tournament's a good idea. The problem with the previous tournament they had is it carried on. You didn't know when the events were going to have. They have a schedule here. Hopefully they can adhere to it. And so I do want to say, for the first time in a long time, things are looking a lot better for Bellator. Congratulations to them. Thank you, Bellator. And for once, I'm not shitting on them.
Yeah, and they're coming back. So they're not going to do any cards until April 2nd. And that night, they're doing the semifinal of the Featherweight Grand Prix that they still have to wrap up. And that's going to be Patricio Pitbull versus Emmanuel Sanchez, which is a rematch from a few years back. And then the winner of that fight's AJ McKee. And either way, it's a great fight. But if it ends up being Pitbull, which I think most would favor, against AJ McKee, like, that's a legitimate huge fight among two pretty well, like, homegrown Bellator stars. Like, I think that could be a very big fight for Bellator. And then you've got this light heavyweight Grand Prix that it seems Bellator has at least, I think, invested in some much needed momentum for the company. Will it play out? Will it fall apart? We'll see. But I do think they have at least grabbed the attention of the MMA world for these series of announcements. And hopefully it means that there will be interest sustained beyond just the initial shows.
Yeah, I think so. There always seems something off about, you know, Bellator on Spike Paramount, right? Like, it was trying to recreate the UFC of yesteryear, right? By bringing Mike Goldberg and Chael and John McCarthy in, right? It's like, it's just like all these old familiar faces, and it's just, it feels like this might, and look, Romero is certainly somebody coming from the UFC, Machida, Rumble Johnson too. But Rumble's somebody who, if he was in the UFC right now, he'd be in a title shot very quickly. So I think this is a great step forward for Bellator. And for the first time in a long time, I don't have a cynical attitude towards what they're doing.
Yeah, I think, especially for us, though, especially the last number of years, it's been very difficult to follow Bellator in Canada. I don't know how many people were necessarily signing up for DAZN if all you were seeking out was Bellator. And like, broadcast wise, I mean, back when, before Spike got flipped over to the Paramount Network, like, it went from like a priority spot on your cable to like, it was way up in the hundreds or so. It's been very difficult to follow Bellator in this country. So Scott Coker has alluded to the fact that they're hopeful of having a deal in place. They're talking to several outlets here in Canada. I hope it is something sustainable in Canada that is not something where you don't have to ask the Canadian consumer to have to go sign up for something in order to watch Bellator. Like, I hope it is a fairly fan-friendly deal that they can make in Canada that just makes the cards more accessible to people.
I agree. I would definitely like a lot more easy access for getting Bellator. Hey, do we have time for one more call? Real quick.
Let's do one more and then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, and then we'll wrap it up. Stepute, you are live. Do you have a quick question for us? Oh, you disappeared. Stepute, you ran away. So I'm sorry. That's it. Then no more calls.
The Bellator talk did him in. So thanks, yes, covered a lot on this show. Thanks to everyone for tuning in live or downloading the podcast after the fact. The numbers count no matter what, so thank you to all. Mr. Chair Talk and I are going to be back on Saturday, March the 6th, after UFC 259. Might be a very late night, Phil. We will find out. It will be three title fights coming your way. And we will have a recap of UFC 260. But what else is going on, Phil?
Well, not much. I mean, this week we had Discord game night, and it was a great success. Our room was at capacity. And so that was really exciting. And so I just encourage everybody to join the Discord, participate, keep the conversation going after the show is off the air. I mean, we have talks on MMA, wrestling, TV, movies, gaming. We have pictures of your pets, and also myself and, Jordan Goodman of the Wellness Policy of the Post Show will be having a conversation on meditation later in the month. I think, we'll be announcing more. Yeah, we'll be having an announcement
on that next week. I believe the wellness policy has an episode next week. And yeah. so that, I have a feeling will be discussed then. So check out the wellness policy next week and join us on Discord in the meantime.
Do all of that stuff. Postwrestling.com. That'll take you to everywhere, including the Discord. So on behalf of the Lord of the Cord, I am John Pollock, and thanks for listening to the UFC 258 post show.
Gina, no one wants you here, Gina.